Welcome back. I'm Sue O'Connell, sitting in for Callie Crossley, and George Cuddy is here. He's the writer whose new book, Where Hash Rules, and that's hash the food, by the way, is the story of Charlie's Sandwich Shop, the famed joint in Boston's South End. George Cuddy, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks
How
for
are
having
you?
Me.
Good to see you again.
Doing very well. Appreciate being here.
So, talk before we talk about the shop itself, which I love, has two P's and an E, which means it's extra special. How did you become a writer?
You know, it's funny. A couple transitions in my life occurred over a period of several decades. I used to create newspapers and magazines on my own when I was a kid. And writing was always my first love and passion. And I always put it to the side. I always thought I had to be in the corporate world or in finance or business or different whatever jobs I might have had. And only the last couple of years, I did some time as a sports writer and journalist in the past in Los Angeles for a number of publications. But I never really fostered and developed the skills and talents I needed to survive as a writer mm-hmm. and to prosper and flourish. And not saying I'm prospering and flourishing now, but I feel comfortable in my skin calling myself a writer because I've really worked the last couple of years to develop the craft. And that's my first love.
And this is an ebook, which is, and it's getting off to being a very successful ebook, which I think is we're at that moment now in development where people are understanding what an ebook is. But for our listeners who might not get it, what's an ebook and how do you get Hash Rules and how did you get it published?
Well, we initially self-published, and that means you go through what's called an aggregator and they take your content and put it together in a format that's applicable to iTunes and the Kindle and the Nook and different mediums out there in the internet. So you can get it to your phone, you can get it over the computer, you can get it to your iPad, whatever internet or, you know,
portable
device yes. you use is not a problem. We're going to publish later this year. We're going to have some hard copies out in small bookstores in Boston, in the restaurant itself.
Because you've got the beautiful photography, too, which is...
I'll tell you, and it's funny, Brooke T. Wolin, who's now working for Bon Appetit in New York.
Who's the photographer.
Yeah, she was a student at Northeastern when she took those
wow.
photos. And she's from Los Angeles and a brilliant talent. And so we're really lucky to have her take some of the old shots.
So Charlie's Sandwich Shop is if you're not from the Boston area, is just renowned. It's Bon Appetit actually had named it one of the best places in one of their annual. It's what you hope it's going to be. The food is what you want it to be. How did you get into a relationship with Charlie's?
I actually moved to Boston about a decade ago and for a job and a girl, and lost both of them in the first 2 weeks of being in Boston. And I was walking down the street with about $5 and a plane ticket in my pocket, ready to go back to California, and stopped in for lunch and never left, really.
Mm-hmm. And Charlie's is on Columbus Ave.
It's on Columbus
in
the South End. It's been there since 1927, and same family has basically run the restaurant since 1946. And it's an amazing, really folklorish landmark in Boston and it's interesting that this segment comes on after your previous one because as I was listening to your show, the notion of acceptance is what Charlie's is all about. Whatever background, whatever story you have, everyone is welcome. And it's usually the people who are, well, it's always the people who are intolerant, who are kind of weeded out.
And the South End, of course, like many neighborhoods in many urban areas, has gone through a number of changes throughout the years and continues to change. But one thing that doesn't change about the South End is the diversity of the neighborhood. And in some of the, you know, the press stuff about the book and in the book itself, you know, it's queens and drag queens. It's poor people and rich people. It's the hedge fund guy and, you know, just somebody who's coming off a construction job that stops into Charlie's. And it is the story you tell of the great American dream of the immigrant hope.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that transitionally in the South End, as it's moved and evolved, as has Boston, you know, Charlie's was always a refuge. It was a place where immigrants were welcome. African Americans who performed in local clubs and hotels who couldn't dine there or stay there at night. When Charlie's was open 24 hours, they would come with their bands late at night and eat and take part in this the revelry that ensued. The Pullman Porters, the famous Pullman Porters who worked the rails across the nation, had their Boston headquarters on the second floor above the restaurant. So they would travel throughout the land and tell other African Americans, hey, when you're in Boston, you're welcome here at this restaurant. Same for the neighborhood immigrant groups, of course, the gay and lesbian populations. It doesn't matter where you're from or what color your skin is or how much money you have in your pocket. Everyone is accepted. Everyone's welcome. And that's really the beauty that in a town that's been torn apart with racial strife and segregation through much of its period of history, the Charlies has kind of maintained that standard of melting pot.
Yeah, I mean, there are some stories of equity inequality in Boston that never get told, and Charlie's is one of them. And of course, you know, we're kind of having a Sammy Davis Jr. revival in the South End, and in the South End News, we recently did one of the South End character columns about Sammy Davis Jr.'s history in Boston, and he actually lived right on Columbus Ave, right next to Charlie's, and used to tap dance in the
doorway. Right.
So, who are some other notables that have passed through?
Well,
like today, for example, George.
Well,
if I were to say to you, who was at Charlie's today, you would say.
Well, I would say Bobby Valentine.
Oh, Bobby Valentine,
the Red Sox. And what's funny and kind of the air and attitude of the place is, you know, there is a picture of Terry Francona, the former manager, right by the cashier stand. And when Bobby Valentine came in today, you know, the first thing Arthur, he's the owner, said was, well, we'll have to take Francona's picture down now and put yours up. And that's just, you know, and Valentine laughed. It was just, you know, you never know who you're going to see in there. And, you know, whether it's a politician, I mean, Al Gore was there when he was vice president. They shut down the whole street. And that's that's detailed in the book. But it's not just the celebrities and you know, the popular crowd. It's the day-in, day-out regulars who interject their lives with the employees and the owners of the restaurant. That's what's really special is that, you know, as you mentioned, births and deaths are all celebrated with some sort of sublime feeling of continuance. And I think that's really what sets Charlie's apart.
What did you learn about writing the book? You know, or what did you learn while writing the book, maybe is a better way to put it.
Several years ago, I started this project, and I was just going to build a web project about Charlie's with some photographs and some anecdotes. And it just kind of evolved from there. It really takes a lot of discipline. Everyone thinks they have the great American novel or the great American story.
And they do. Just to write it would be a little bit tough.
Exactly. Actually having the discipline to sit down and not just say, I'm going to bang out a page tonight, but I'm going to put together a good page or a good paragraph or a good chapter and really make it quality so that, you know, I wanted to, as much as Charlie's appeals to diners who want a hearty meal, I wanted that unique tapestry and really combine those stories together in a tasteful way.
How does Charlie's survive today? I mean, the South End right now is in a it's restaurant row. There are many, many restaurants there, both affordable and unaffordable restaurants. You can get any type of variety of a great meal. And Charlie sits right on the boundary, the invisible boundary between the South End and the Back Bay, and certainly in an area where we watch at least every now and then a restaurant going out of business because the lease is up and the money to maintain the lease is too high even in this economy. How does Charlie's continue to survive?
There's a couple of factors involved. The first I would say is hard work and dedication of the Mandarides family. I mean, Arthur, Chris, and their sisters, Marie and Fontaine, work in tandem. It's almost like a ballet, watching them behind the counter and interacting with customers. That's number one. Secondly, it's good grubs at a decent price. And there are so many regular and returning customers. Even today, before the manager, Bobby Valentine, came in, there's a gentleman who hadn't been in since 2006. I remember him coming in 2006, lives in North Carolina, comes in with a big fat ham to give Arthur and says, hey, you can cook this up, you know, for your customers if you want.
Yeah.
That's, again, the continuity of itinerant customers, regular customers, and tourists who are a little fascinated that there's no bathroom and there is a table limit and there's a waiting line and cash only. And these nuances and idiosyncrasies are really what make it a special place.
Are you worried that your book's going to change the delicate balance of Charlie's
I don't think seven volumes could change the delicate balance. I think it's pretty safe.
You think you're good?
Yes.
What story that you learned about Charlie's or about the South End? I mean, what really stuck with you that was a kind of aha moment or just surprising to you? You know, someone who lived at Charlie's, basically, and although not a Boston native, could practically be one. You know, what is it that really struck you?
I think that in this day and age, as you mentioned, in the South End, specifically with restaurant closures, I mean, Charlie's has been open for 85 years. And if we talk in terms of generations of loyal customers and friends, it's not just that people come in to have turkey hash and eggs and toast and coffee. It's that they come in with a story and leave with a smile. And I think about when the South End like Tent City was going on, mm-hmm. and Mal King and that
right,
movement.
Tent City, of course, is the complex right near Copley Place across from the Back Bay train station that was is called Tent City because former mayoral candidate Mal King, an activist, they camped out there in tents looking for affordable housing, and it became one of the, I think, one of the first affordable housing mixes in the city.
Yeah, it was interesting. One of the stories that stuck me about that time in my research was that, you know, there was a huge police presence worried about potential riots and insurrection, basically with the tent establishment there, and you know, policemen were coming in to get their meals, and the protesters were coming in to get their meals, and there was a dialogue, and a lot of the good that resulted from that came out of those dialogues in the restaurant that then went down two blocks to where they were camped out, and there was no violence. Just this community spirit that really kind of was the catalyst started in the restaurant, I believe, in terms of some sort of communication between the groups. And that stuck out the most for me because that could have been a powder keg, mm-hmm. and a simple spark would have really ignited something. So to have the cop in line to get some takeout sandwiches and have a protester in line to do the same and they're interacting, that really was something that stuck with me in the research.
So you've got a couple of events coming up where folks can get together and celebrate Charlie's and celebrate the book and read the book. You've got a potluck coming up with the South End Historical Society,
right? Very, very excited. A week from today on the 28th at the South End Historical Society in Boston, they're hosting a foodie potluck and reading. We're going to have a slideshow from the book, and I'm going to read some excerpts and hopefully not slur over my own words too poorly. But I'm very, very excited for that. It'll be great to have a community event like that to kind of kickstart the book plan and media tour this summer.
A media tour.
That's
George
right.
Cuddy on a media tour.
That's frightening.
Who would have thunk it?
I'll have to buy a new suit.
What's next for you now that you're a writer?
Well, I've already started my next book. And I think this is going to be something very special. You might recall, and your listeners might recall, that 7 years ago, a gentleman was arrested in Boston Harbor leaving on a yacht with $2 million in cash. And his name was the Casanova Con Artist, labeled that because mm-hmm. he bilked old ladies for money across the country. Didn't murder anyone,
no.
But his name is Michael Suter. He spent 7 years in jail in New Mexico. His first bust out of jail, he had a limousine come and pick him up on a working party at a minimum security prison. So I'm going to write his story. And it's very interesting. Money's been paid back in restitution, fortunately, but he's an interesting character. And it's an American con man kind of with a heart of gold and the story of the woman who stood by him throughout his incarceration. So it's going to be exciting. Right? It's funny with Michael Suter, though. I told him going in, it wasn't going to be a press release. It wasn't going to be a tell-all on his side. It was going to be warts and all. So I'm going to interview the victims. I'm going to interview the prosecutors and go from there. And it's exciting to work on a new book.
You know, you're a natural storyteller, which I know you know.
It's an Irish thing.
I know. It's been, you know, droning on and on and on. So
you have a mute button, don't you?
So, now do you feel that you've got this one book under your belt? And, you know, if anyone who has ever, I sort of share the same viewpoint as you as a newspaper publisher. I have people all the time telling me, hey, I've got a great column. And I say, great, write 10 columns and then come talk to me because everybody's got a great column. You know, everybody's got a great story. And now that you've really gotten the discipline down, and you know you're a marathon runner too, so I love it when you talk about discipline.
Retired.
Like, you know, oh gee, it's tough for me to get this done. But now are you just swimming with ideas? I mean, is there a bit of confidence now that you kind of get your sea legs underneath you? And
you know there is, and Chris Mandzarides from the restaurant always used to to advise me, you know, focus, George, focus, and that's what I have now. And it's taken, you know, many years. Last year, 2011 was a little tumultuous for me. I had some health issues, and it kind of was the launching point for me to say, you know, I'm going to write that play I've always wanted to write. I'm going to write a musical. I'm going to continue writing poetry, and I'm going to be focused on my true passion, which is writing. And whatever happens, if I sell one book or a million, I'll be doing it with the heart.
Well, see, that's another reason to go to Charlie's Sandwich Shop in the South End. You get good advice.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Well, thanks so much for coming in. This has been a great pleasure to talk to you in such a formal setting. It's been great.
Thank you.
We've been talking about the Boston institution known as Charlie's Sandwich Shop over in Columbus Ave in the South End. My guest, George Cuddy, has written the book. It's called Where Hash Rules. You can get it at Amazon.com, among other places, so make sure you check it out. If you'd like to learn more, you can visit wgbh.org/ Callie Crossley. I'm Sue O'Connell. I've been in for Callie Crossley, and I'll be back tomorrow so we can talk about the week in local news. You're listening to us on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.